Hello, welcome to the New Stack Makers, a podcast where we talk about at-scale application development, deployment, and management.
Hello, I'm Heather Joslin, Features Editor at the New Stack, and welcome to Makers, a podcast where we explore the issues faced by developers working at scale with the people who are seeking solutions to those challenges. Today, we're going to talk about databases and what's on the horizon for them, as more organizations depend on Kubernetes and other cloud-native technology. We're also going to talk a bit about new data that indicates how Kubernetes is being used, not who's using it, but how they're using it, subject about which there hasn't been a lot of data available yet. So excited to dig into that. We'll be joined by Jim Walker, Principal Product Evangelist at Cockroach Labs. Hi, Jim, and tell us a little bit about your background.
Hi, Heather. Thanks for having me, first of all. I'm excited to be here. I'm originally a developer, but I've been doing marketing for really quite some time because, well, marketing and sales drove me nuts, so I became a developer. But I've been in emerging tech for a while. I've been in the Kubernetes space for really quite some time, spent some time at CoreOS, talked and consulted into a couple other companies in the Kubernetes space. So ultimately, it landed here at Cockroach Labs, talking data. Love it.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. And Michelle Guino, Senior Technical Content Manager at Cockroach, also a recent alum of Gatsby. And fun fact, she used to be a reporter at the New Stack, so her name may be familiar to some of our listeners. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Thanks for having me today. And just fun fact, this is my very first podcast.
Excellent. Well, we'll be kind. So, so let's get started. We're talking today about sort of databases and what's ahead for them. The database field with regard to cloud native is pretty crowded. Can you give me sort of a shorthand tour of the ecosystem, the major categories and players?
Sure, I can take that off, Heather. You know, cloud native to me presents a set of principles, I think, around the way that we treat our systems, the way we treat compute, the way we treat development. And I think if you start to look at databases in the same way that we look at kind of the way we're approaching these newer technologies, a cloud native way, I think it fits pretty well. I think, you know, lift and shift is kind of one of these things that people kind of move things into containers and run it in the cloud. Is that cloud native? Well, the same thing applies to a database, you know, running a database on a container in a single service, you know, that's kind of, you know, that's like the lift and shift. I think there's been, a few solutions that have kind of risen from our legacy past that I consider kind of move and improve. Let's take a layer of the database and rework it so it is distributed. Right. So it does kind of follow some of these distributed principles that we see in cloud native technologies that are kind of allowing us to do some really interesting things. Typically, we'll see basically the storage layer become distributed. Or think about, you know, automating of sharding, taking one of the characteristics and helping with it. And then I think the third category of which, yeah, Cockroach Labs, and there's a few of us that kind of contend in this place, it's basically re-architect and rebuild. Let's re-architect from the ground up to be cloud native, to implement kind of on the core principles of distributed systems and be kind of this world as opposed to kind of an old and living in a newer world. And I think this category right now in terms of databases, I think one of the biggest challenges is not everybody thinks distributed yet. And I think, you know, these distributed principles and a distributed mindset is what's helping people kind of start to understand, you know, the true value of cloud native. And so that's the way I look at it, kind of those three categories. Is that helpful, Heather?
Yeah, it's very helpful. Michelle, did you want to add anything to that?
No, Jim's our category killer when it comes to this stuff.
Okay.
What about the report?
Excellent, excellent. How does a distributed system make databases more complicated?
Funny enough, distributed systems should not make the database more complicated for the developer. And it should simplify a lot of the operations for us as well, right? Because that's really kind of this whole concept of cloud native, right? How do we apply some of these kind of, you know, the operation, how do we automate operations and simplify the task of sharding a database or simplify the task of making it more resilient, right? Scale, resilience. These are the things that we build into our technologies and our systems today, right? That's core distributed systems. So it should actually simplify. Where things get interesting is, and I think this is kind of one of those things, you know, Michelle and I have talked about this a lot. It's how do you build a distributed mindset in your team? And a distributed mindset is a different way of thinking. It took me a while to really kind of sort this out for myself. And it was more along the lines of like, look, we think about the logical kind of functional flow of our systems or the logical data model, say in the database. I think what's interesting when you become distributed is you have to overlay this physical understanding of this world. And when you start thinking about that physical layer of where data lives and how it's interacting across multiple different regions or multiple different nodes, that's where the complexity enters. And it's really a layer of becoming more comfortable with the concept of location. I think that's where it's a paradigm shift. And I think that's where the complexity comes from. But from just purely dealing with the database, scale, resilience, propping it up, getting it moving, it should be actually more simple than our past, right? It's just, it's that paradigm shift is where the complexity is coming, I think.
I agree with Jim that I think a lot of people don't approach this as the true paradigm shift that it is. And I mean, I know it's, you know, trite or whatever to say paradigm shift, but I think a lot of people are excited about the new tech, but then they bring their assumptions about how things work and how they've always worked to this new technology. And they are trying to work with it like this tightly coupled linear way. Mm-hmm. And it just fails, or if it doesn't fail, you know, they have to fight against their own process in order to use it. And they're not capturing the benefits they came for. They're not capturing savings or speed. Things aren't faster. So I think there's a lot of frustration until you can kind of cross that event horizon and just get it. And I think the people who are working with it well do eventually get it, but it would be great if we could start there.
One thing that does make this more complicated is Kubernetes was not set up for transactional or stateful applications. Can you tell us a little bit about the survey that you did recently with Red Hat and what you found out about?
Well, there's two threads there. One is how Kubernetes originally wasn't really set up for stateful workloads. So, you know, OG Kubernetes had some built-in resources like components, you know, pods all the way on up to deployments. And then you could use control loops to propel your orchestrated components towards your desired state or running them against the desired end state. So the control loops are what makes Kubernetes, like it gives its self-healing superpowers. And then the components are what makes it horizontally scalable. Unfortunately, though, distributed databases require more complex sequences of actions than you can just assemble from these kind of Lego bricks of the built-in stuff. There was a long time where running a database on Kubernetes was just ridiculously difficult. You needed a huge team or just to write a ton of custom code. And it just made sense. The path of sanity for most people was to run it alongside instead of on. So, you know, the ecosystem had to mature. Kubernetes itself had to mature before it really even became realistic to run a database on Kubernetes. So, you know, some things happened. We got advanced stateful components with, I think it was 2018 when we got stateful sets. That meant that you could have a consistent endpoint to connect to because pods created in a stateful set keep the same name. So you can have your pods deployed and scaled and come and go as necessary, but it's always possible to get back there and find the same thing and have the same persistent data. So that was not possible before.
Yeah, part of the problem was is people were trying to take this legacy tech and run it on Kubernetes. And,
yeah.
You know, the first time I ever saw Cockroach Database, I was at... it was OpenStack Summit and Alex Pulvey, who was the CEO of CoreOS, and oh man, I forget the name of the person who ran OpenStack. Like they were showing Kubernetes on stage and they needed an application that would just not die, just like Kubernetes, right? Like a pod can go up and down and it's going to maintain state. I need exponent pods, right? And they needed an application and they reached out to the team at CoreOS because, well, honestly, this is a database that was truly architected for this world. Like it didn't need all this crazy, you know, control loops and like we were doing that because the stuff didn't fit this new environment. This kind of comes back to that paradigm shift we were talking about, right? And so, you know, the early days, we were trying to make a square peg fit a round hole a little bit, and it just didn't work. Stateful workloads was kind of something early days of Kubernetes. People were just like, oh God, I don't know. I mean, you can use daemon sets to sort this out. And you know, interesting enough, when I first got interested in Kubernetes, I was like, what is a stateless workload? I'm just an old developer, I guess. There's always a database or some sort of storage back there. But I think with you know, stateful sets, what it allowed us to do is to maintain some sort of state within that pod so that when it fails and it comes back, I can now be where I was. And it's really as simple as that. So, a database is execution and storage. Okay, well, here is my storage, connect back to there, right? Here is the state of what I was in, right? And so, you know, here's the certificates that I'm maintaining, right? Like, and so being able to maintain that state within your component, whatever it is that's running in that pod, was such a critical moment for Kubernetes. And, you know, working on stateful sets. And I remember when that got introduced, Michelle, it was kind of a it was a momentous kind of KubeCon, actually. I remember when that went down. And, you know, for us at Cockroach, we were already doing it, though, honestly. Like, we didn't need stateful sets. I think it started to open up a lot of other types of things, stateful workloads, the stuff that we're all building right now to take advantage of those things. We were a little bit more of a natural fit, but I think that was those were the challenges.
One thing about the survey that you found, what percentage of people are running both stateful and stateless workloads on? I think it was like 59% or something like that.
Yeah.
So that tells us what a lot of people are doing this already.
Heather, I sure would have liked to have run this back in 2018. You know what I mean? Like, running a stateful workload on Kubernetes back then was difficult at best. And I think we've come a long way. And what was it, Michelle? Was it like 60% people are running stateful workloads now, right? Something like that.
Yeah. And then basically the other remaining 40% is split mostly towards transactional, and a few people are doing analytic only. That's specifically on Kubernetes. And as Jim has pointed out previously, Kubernetes is not a great tool for analytic data.
Yeah. So there are things that are happening in the field. I mean, in June, Kelsey Hightower announced that Google has created a Kubernetes operator for the Oracle database called El Carro, which translates to the car, which Oracle is not, according to the latest Stack Overflow survey, of Oracle is the second most dreaded database in terms of developers. I mean, changes are happening. So this should be an interesting development. What do you see as the greatest needs developers have right now in terms of databases and Kubernetes?
First of all, Heather, I have to comment on El Carro. Maybe we call our operator El Cucaracha or something. You know, we'll just start using, but it's the same name, I guess. The introduction of these operators, like, there's an operator for pretty much every database out there now. It was kind of one of these things. I was around when operators happened. And I remember Brandon Phillips from CoreOS was talking to Rob Zumsky. Rob Zumsky kind of manages operators and everything going on at Red Hat now, as they went in there. And, you know, we were talking about them. Are they controllers? Are they controller operators? We actually ended up calling them operators because they were taking the complexity of managing something and scripting it, basically. I mean, that's really what an operator does. I mean, it's just an API so Kubernetes can deal with these things, which is awesome and brilliant, actually. It's the initial setup of a database that gets really complex. And I think that's why these databases, all of them, were like, oh my God, I got to have an operator. You know, if we didn't need an operator because we just fit, you do need an operator for a lot of day two operations, like managing certificates and, you know, dealing with rolling upgrades and these sort of things. And I think, you know, for us, it was a different equation. But I think what's important for developers is, you know, do we have the simplicity of the operator framework and this operator there to help us deal with the complexity of running these systems in these distributed environments? Because it's just not, it's not simple. And so, sure, Google can hire, 40,000 engineers to run things, and Facebook can hire another 20,000. You know, if I'm, a small insurer in the middle of Ohio, I don't have the resources to do this. So how do you use the platform to your advantage? And I think as the Kubernetes community has matured, I think things have become a lot easier. And I think what we need today in the Kubernetes community, we need to simplify all this stuff. All of these concepts need to be simplified down. And personally, I like a lot of the work that the OpenShift team is doing at Red Hat, because I think they think about simplifying these things, making it more broadly accessible by the developer, this sort of stuff. For us, we want to take care of that database side of it, so you don't have to do any of those things, which, we're doing a good job. We built something that was explicitly for that. But I think all of our solutions and the way we think about these things, definitely in the community and within, the general CNCF, is how do we simplify these things? And I think we're starting to see that. We're seeing, lots of different projects pop up that help us with these things. Like, I love what's happening with OpenTelemetry. Like, there's some really, really great stuff going on that is simplifying these things. But to me, what developers need is simplicity, because they just want to code. They don't want to deal. Yeah. Like, they want to be empowered more than anything.
Right, right. And Kubernetes has always been an issue that the complexity that it, so you see that trend, like Kubernetes less more developer friendly.
I hope we're seeing that. I think we are. I think, you see the amount of people that are interested in this as a project and just as a community. I think, like it or not, it's going to happen. Funny enough, I was a couple of years ago, I was talking to Dan about this, and I told him, hey, let's ask like 15 people to describe or to define Kubernetes, and let's see what we get back from people, And it's like, I think people's understanding now has at least coalesced around, okay, what is this and how is it going to be of value? And I think that was the important first step. And what we're starting to see now from the community is people are starting to talk about workloads. What am I doing in Kubernetes? Mm-hmm. Not how am I doing it? Let's not talk about Envoy and Istio and all those things. Those things are great, but let's talk about what we're doing there and like, how are we getting these efficiencies? And what does it mean for X, Y, and Z that I'm trying to accomplish from a business point of view? Because ultimately, that's what's, I think, going to make this. And I think we're starting to see that now. And it's exciting to me because I think the underlying tech will simplify around that.
Yeah, people have lived with these this technology for a little while now, and they're definitely beyond the test drive stage.
That's right, Heather. And I think that's what the survey helped us understand. You know, when Michelle and I first developed the questions, we were like, nobody's telling me where is this? You know what I mean? Right, Michelle? Yeah. Like, we were like, what are people doing? And that's what we were trying to do with this, right? And I think the questions did a decent job of doing that.
And, you know, it's our first time through this. So we learned some things. We'll definitely be evolving them. Ultimately, Kubernetes is a platform for getting applications built and deployed, and workloads tell the real story of how organizations are using Kubernetes right now. The most surprising thing that came out of the survey, which we asked general questions because we did partner with Red Hat on this. So even though we're a database company, it was not a database-oriented mm-hmm. survey. You know, we did ask that one specific question about what kind of data workloads are you doing, but that was pretty much it. So people kind of came to us with this result. So 95% of the companies we talked to are using Kubernetes in production. Of the 200 companies we spoke with, 46% of the respondents told us that data intensive workloads are their number one priority. As a matter of fact, 10% of all respondents named it as their only concern. And another interesting thing is that they could like stack rank their concerns. And we had other concerns like budget or, you know, hiring teams and training experts. And we had things like, you know, migrating complex legacy architecture. All in all, people were mostly concerned about data intensive workloads. And then the people who said that was their number one concern, none of them mentioned migrating complex legacy applications. So what that said to us at the end of the day, when Jim and I sat down and tried to pull these threads together, at least for the companies we talked to, they've already made it over to the cloud. They're comfortable, you know, with what they are doing in terms of infrastructure, in terms of the application layer. And now they're recognizing that their database is something of a dead hand. And they're looking at what they can do to bring that to like unify the application layer and the data layer on Kubernetes.
So how is Cockroach Labs approaching this?
We run everything in Kubernetes.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, we do run everything on Kubernetes. We are kind of a cloud native database. It's kind of like, how are we challenging this or how are we addressing this? Well, you kind of have to go back to the inception of this company. And Kubernetes is direct descendant to Borg from Google, right? And Borg is the back end of Google. You know, Kubernetes is kind of this modern, how do we get this to everybody? And it's not a one-to-one comparison, but in general, if you look at what happened at Google, you know, 10 years ago or whatever that was, you know, they created Spanner, which is their own database that was doing this as well. And the core principles and the core architecture that we find in Spanner is what we've done at Cockroach Labs. There is so much awesome, incredible technology that's come out of Google in the past like 10, 15 years. And I think that's where things get really interesting. We took the database side of that and said, like, great, how do we make that available to everybody and cloud native and out there working? And I think that's what's interesting. You know, I'm sorry, Heather, go back to the CoreOS days, but a lot of my like stuff really started there. And I think the team was really onto some really cool stuff. You know, I think Polvi had said, you know, what is, we want to create this thing, Giphy, Google infrastructure for everyone else. And I love that term. And it's really just stuck with me. And, you know, look, the Google team had Bigtable. Did they use Bigtable to do transactions? No, because it was the wrong architecture, right? They knew that at the core of what they were trying to do, let's not like retrofit transactions into my NoSQL engine, which is kind of like the Bigtable side. No, let's build a database from the ground up to be, you know, to provide transactional consistency, to scale, to ensure transactions are going to happen sub 20 or 40 milliseconds, right? Like those problems are difficult to deal with and it just takes time to build stuff. That's how we're addressing it. Well, we were built to address this, right? Like that's our entire kind of edict as a company and where we're going. So I think that's the best way I can answer. Let's not put a Band-Aid on it. Let's just build from the ground up and make this right. That's what we're doing.
So re-architect and rebuild.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Coming all the way back.
I mean, is it possible for many organizations that, you know, there's not going to be one database solution that, and if that's true, what does that mean? First of all, is so, that Is that possible?
Amen, Heather, before I, I'm sorry, I'm just chomping to respond. Look at people, I think it's a marketing thing or something. Let's consolidate. Let's distill the data Blaze platform into this data lake. And I'm going to do everything on this. It just, to me, it's preposterous. It's preposterous because data and what we're trying to accomplish, and it comes back to this thinking that I was talking about, distributed thinking, and what is the problem with distributed thinking? Yes, logically, maybe it makes sense to put everything into a single data lake and deal with it. Physically, it makes no sense. Okay. Think about an analytical query that's going to be running across, multiple different regions across the entire planet. Do you really want to make that happen? You're going to get killed on the egress costs alone between the different cloud providers. What if you did want to run that thing across different cloud providers? Oh gosh, so when we start thinking about our workloads, we have to think about the physical location because that's what we're beholden to with the cloud providers, right? And that's what we're beholden to with, the complexity of our systems. And so for me, I think the right data tool will solve the right data problem. If you're going to do transactions at global scale, well, there's data that belongs in German servers, live on German servers, because remember now we have this GDPR requirements too. How do you deal with that in a, do you want to do analytics in some central place in, say, Atlanta or something, and you have this data coming over, and the complexities of this global commerce world that we live in, I think are the most tenuous and the most difficult from a challenge point of view in terms of what is the word, that consolidation into a single platform.
I mean, the whole idea of consolidation is directly counter to the whole notion of cloud native. Small Yeah. autonomous teams running small, loosely coupled workloads. Having Kubernetes means that my team, I might need Postgres for my microservice, and you might want MongoDB and Redis. So some of our use cases require performance. Some we just need for 20 minutes and they can just evaporate. Others are write intensive, others are read intensive. Nothing's going to do all of these things ideally well. And so we do have the capability to apply the right tools to the right jobs and then just have this data mesh layer that just handles it for us.
That's right, Michelle. And re-architect and use CDC or use Spark or whatever it is to basically get things into the single location so I can do analytics and do it intelligently. And I just think it's an architectural decision, not a tools decision.
100% agree with that.
One last question. In terms of the recent survey, what are some things that you'd like to drill down more into in terms of how people are using Kubernetes?
Next time, we would like to just get a lot more detailed. So we asked some kind of higher level questions about how people are using. So we were asking things like, are you using in-house DevOps SRE teams and what format are those teams taking? And then we also asked what are the size, what's the distribution of your workload? We found a really interesting split there. About 70% are either running, half of that 70% of everybody is running 5 or fewer workloads, and the other half is running 15 or more. There's a few in the middle, but mostly that's what people are doing. Mm-hmm. So what we didn't do and what we couldn't do from the way the survey responses were structured, we can't take a look at how those tasks are assigned, how those workload tasks are actually handled in terms of the people running their in-house. In-house, there was another interesting 50-50 split. 95% of people are running in-house. Only 5% are using managed cloud services, which surprised me, but we can talk about that separately. So almost everybody's doing it in-house, right? But 57% have a dedicated DevOps or SRE team managing their cloud infrastructure for them and running things. But the rest have basically cross-functional teams. So that's spread out over the whole company. So what's interesting there is how do those workloads correspond to the team sizes? Are the big workloads going to the companies that have the big teams that are dedicated? When Jim gets back to simplifying, which is what we have to do to really, democratize Kubernetes for that, insurance company in Kansas, we have to make sure that a small team can handle it.
The other area, Michelle, that I found interesting too, and Heather, I think we'll explore this a lot more as well. It's interesting to see how this group of people, this cohort, is actually thinking about serverless as a future. And to me, that's what's really interesting, because I think there is some sort of correlation between what we're doing with a lot of the concepts in Kubernetes and how we script and automate and deal with all this backend complexity with the way that developers and the way that we want our systems to work in the future. To me, that right now is, if I look at the next 3 to 5 to 7 years or whatever we're going to do here, whatever that horizon is, I think that's what's really interesting. And I think the survey results showed that, you know, I think people in this community, in this cohort at least, are definitely thinking in that direction, which was great.
And then serverless gets right back to like that very low friction. We handle things for you so you can just go build cool stuff.
I guess it's time to wrap it up. When this podcast is posted on the New Stack site, our summary will link to the survey we've been discussing. I want to thank Jim Walker and Michelle Dino of Cockroach Labs for joining us today. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks, Heather.
Thanks, Heather.
And we thank all of you for joining us for this episode of Makers.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe on Simplecast to listen to more episodes on the New Stack Makers. Create and share your favorite audiogram using our Simplecast player. For more articles and great stories, go to thenewstack.io.